Fan Morning Show brought to you by Guardian Protection, your hometown home and business security company. Tons of football, obviously, on today's show. Pitt with a big matchup against SMU Saturday night, 8 p.m. It's also Halloween. And someone texts in at 412-928-9370. I'm handing out my phone number to hot single moms.
You are?
No, someone texted in.
Oh.
Said that. Mm. No, do you think I got that kind of riz, Doran?
Oh, you use the word riz for
Yeah.
I'm surprised you used it in the right context.
If someone of my age uses the word riz, does that immediately negate the riz?
Yes.
Yeah. Thought so.
Yes.
Pat Bostick with us in studio until 9 o'clock. We got Bill Hillgrove coming on at 7:50. Pat brought to us by Gatorade, available at Giant Eagle stores. How you doing, Mr. Bostick? Good morning to you, and a happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you. Good morning. I'm doing great.
What are we handing out tonight, Patty?
An assortment of small candy, I think.
Variety.
Yeah, I think there's Snickers and Reese's and...
You have a ton of kids in your area.
I think there might be some Whoppers in there.
Whopper?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Milky Way. We have a lot of kids. So, not in our house specifically, but just in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I heard you guys talking about the adult cooler. There will be several.
Very
those.
Good.
Yes.
Is that something everyone's doing these days?
I think so.
I think it is. 412-928-9370. Text us. You're doing the whole adult Halloween thing. You know, Halloween evolves, right? You're a kid, trick or treat, and then you get a little bit older, and there's Devil's Night, and you're looking to get scared, and that's just basically Doran's entire existence. Then you get to college, and the parties,
yes.
And the partial nudity with the costumes.
Yes.
And then you become our age, and you're schlepping the kids around, and you might want a beverage or two.
Yes.
The evolution of Halloween.
Where did trick-or-treat originate? Like, what is the
I'm on it.
What is the trick part? Where are they tricking? Are they tricking with the costumes? Are kids tricking the people asking for the candy? Because every time a kid comes to your door,
if anyone should know, it's you.
I don't. I was thinking about it last night. My kids asked me, actually.
What is going on with this seat over here? The can light's not on.
Mm-hmm.
This thing, it sounds like it's reverberating in my ears. I got to move again.
That's what Whaley said yesterday. He's like, who sits over here outside of me?
Yeah, he was blaming you.
Yeah.
Thought it was your fault.
He's blaming me. He's here during the week first. He was here first.
He wasn't blaming you. Look at me trying to stir the pot already. Trick-or-treating, according to AI here on the Google.com, trick-or-treating has multiple origins, including the Celtic festival of Samhain,
mm-hmm.
the Scottish practice of guising, and the German-American tradition of bell snickling. Well, I'm happy we cleared that up. Yeah, clearly, Doran, it's because of guising and bell snickling.
Right.
I mean, like, you should have known that.
Sorry.
Naturally, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bell snickling.
The hell is that?
I'm looking that up now, next.
You just went down a rabbit hole, bud.
I did. We're trying to inform the people today. What is bell snickling? When people immigrated to Pennsylvania, they brought their German traditions with them. Bellsnickel was known in Pennsylvania in the early 1800s. Among Pennsylvania Germans, Bellsnickel is the character who visits homes prior to Christmas to check up on the behavior of the children. All right. The more I Google, the less I feel like we know.
Yep.
So I'm going to stop that right now.
I heard Pennsylvania in there, so maybe Pennsylvania's got something to do with this.
We stake some claim to the whole thing.
Maybe,
we do.
Maybe it started here, Doran.
Yeah, there we go.
Maybe it all started at an Imperial with a young Doran Dickerson. A young Doran Dickerson walking around scaring the bejesus out of people with Michael Myers' concert.
Are you trying to scare people tonight?
Oh, God, yes, he is.
Probably. Yeah, probably. I think I might bring out the chainsaw.
Chainsaw? A real chainsaw?
Yeah.
Don't, Doran.
What?
I care about you. Don't mess around with a real chainsaw.
Why?
Because you could hurt yourself, A. B, you could maim a child.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Not intentionally.
Well, you guys ever go to those haunted yard places, haunted house places,
yes.
where you, like, they have the fake chainsaws where they actually put them on your arm, but it's
yes.
like rubber?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, I don't like that.
You ever been to 100 Acre Manor?
Mm-hmm.
I have not. I haven't done it since high school. I mean, that's like...
Big first date kind of deal, or big
yeah,
date
wife,
kind of deal.
My wife and then. I did that in high school.
That's not a good idea, though. That's not a great idea for a first date.
No, you got to be manly.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. You got to be there for them when the chainsaw guy's
Crowley.
Bearing down.
Can you imagine Crowley?
Exactly. Yeah. Jumping into Leanna's arms.
Help me!
Help me! Not you, me!
The hell with you, hold me!
Right. Bad first date.
Tweet us, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Text us, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. We will get into the pit matchup in full format about 7:35. We've got Bill Hillgrove at 7:50. You're going to spend a lot of time on pit season. Going to spend a ton of time on the matchup against SMU. It's a huge one for Pitt. Obviously, Penn State with a big one against Ohio State. So a lot of college football to get to. But we start with you, Pat, not with bell snicking, but with Russell Wilson and what he's been able to add to the Steelers' offense. Are you seeing anything right now that is unsustainable?
No, I'm not. I think the only thing that would be unsustainable is the pass protection. I think that would be the one thing that concerns me moving forward. You know, the Giants had a good front. Obviously, Dexter Lawrence, I mean, they chose to try to have a back block him on one play, which wasn't that was McCormick who whiffed. But Broderick Jones, I think Dan Moore's gotten better. I feel like the left side's in pretty good stead. The right side, you have concerns about. But, I mean, there's guys getting involved in the passing. We've seen more from Van Jefferson with Russell Wilson. We've seen more from Darnell Washington with Russell Wilson. The distribution of the football is much better. The deep ball is more in play. I feel like it's more catchable. And, you know, I hear people say, like, well, he's not mobile. I disagree.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I mean, he's extending plays. I mean, the touchdown pass was clinic in terms of rolling to your right, beautiful throw in the back of the end zone, call back, obviously, for the face mask. But, no, I don't see anything that's unsustainable. And the biggest thing for me is just the presence of it. You know, the pre-snap stuff and getting into the right play. You can just tell that he's got a command, and it's a confidence that emanates throughout the offense. I was watching a Gruden clip. Gruden did a breakdown. His stuff's phenomenal, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
It's not just the feeling nicey stuff, which is hilarious. Woo! But the actual breakdown stuff, he said it, man. Like, when you got a quarterback in that huddle that emanates confidence, it spreads to everyone else. And they got a young offense. And that's so important. And you can just see they're playing for him. And it's different.
Is this offense, whenever you watch the games, you watch the last two games with Russell Wilson, I think that we can agree that the offense looks different than what it did against with Justin Fields at quarterback. Mm-hmm. But whenever you watch these games, is this offense predictable? Like, can you see, like, what they're running? Like, this isn't calculus type offense whenever you see it. I mean, you got rollouts, you got boots,
yep.
You have, you know, the normal traditional, play action. Is it very predictable?
I think you know what they want to do. Yeah, and that's everybody week whatever, week seven, week eight. I mean, there's not a team in the NFL that's worth a damn that's going week to week changing who they are. You know, they want to run the ball. Najee's running the ball better than he's ever run it,
man,
in his career, because he's got confidence in the scheme. And Arthur Smith is tailoring what they're doing in the run game around him. Russ is a very good play-action quarterback. He is mobile enough to move the pocket. He's not a guy that's going to sit in there at 5'10 and a half or whatever he actually is and look down the middle of the field and consistently make throws. They are who they are, but they find a way. The best offenses find a way to mask it and break tendencies when necessary. So, you know, I laugh a little bit. Though they're predictable, I could call the play out. Well, yeah, I mean, SMU is going to run zone read. That's who they are. They're not going to line up under center and change it up this week because they don't want to be predictable. I think there's a, at this point in the season, there's an identity to it. And it'll be incumbent on Arthur Smith to doctor it up and window dress it so it isn't just like the tendencies aren't 70%, you know, in a given formation or given down a distance. They're closer to 60-40, 50-50.
People don't buy into this because I don't know if it's the majority of our listeners, but there's a lot of folks out there who don't think Mike Tomlin's as good of a coach as he actually is. After the bye, they are really good at changing tendencies. Like, I don't think people realize how little time during a game week in season you have to do stuff. I mean, your first practice is on Wednesday. You're reviewing stuff sometimes on the plane, but you're reviewing stuff on Mondays, and then you get into more on Tuesday. Like, you don't have a ton of time. You're trying to break tendency, but it's not until you have a couple of weeks here where you can really sit down and look at things full form, where you really can shift things, and they generally do offensively and defensively, and they have the last couple of years. 412-928-9370. It's the Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service. Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. You've talked about the traditional dropback passing game. We'll get into that a little bit coming up next. Areas perhaps of concern for the Steelers offense. And then I want to get into this SMU Pitt game. I am chomping at the bit to discuss with you guys. Maybe a little kicker talk, Bostic. Another 57-yarder for Ben Sauls last week in the dismantling of Syracuse. Ton of football, Pitt and Steelers, and a little bit of Penn State as we move forward. Real quick, so the Dodgers win the World Series last night. The Yankees were up 5-0. You had back-to-back homers from Judge and should have been Pirate Jazz Chisholm. And the place was going bonkers. Well, there were a couple of errors in the top of the fifth, and Gerrit Cole was on the mound, and he could have gotten out of it. Ground ball to first. It looked like Freeman could have run to the bag and got the out. If not, Gerrit Cole should have been running hard to the bag, was not, and then next thing you know, it's 5-5. Here's an article I'm looking at on ESPN.com. And this drives me up a wall. What's funny? Me coughing? Yeah. I got something in my throat.
What's funny is...
Your mic's not on.
What's funny is you muted it. You turned your mic off, and the whole world heard you cough. Because, like, you can at least do it discreetly. Like, if I just go, oh, my God, I have to cough.
I'm trying to be a professional over here. We're supposed to move past it. We don't get distracted on this show.
Yeah, right.
So ESPN.com, they write a piece about how the Dodgers, well, the stars did their part, but really it's about the supporting cast because no team in Major League Baseball lost more players due to injury or more games due to injury than the Dodgers this year. Dude, when your payroll's $800 million, and you lose guys, the next guy's pretty good too.
Yes, no question. That, yeah, I don't feel bad for him.
No.
Like, I don't feel sorry for him.
That's the biggest advantage, frankly, to having these gargantuan payrolls. Yes, you have the stars, and that's massive. I mean, it's super important. But if, God forbid, next year the Pirates are in contention and Paul Skenes has to miss six starts, you're done.
Done.
You're done. The Dodgers, oh, Tyler Glasnow's hurt. Just next starter comes in from the minor leagues, he's throwing 100 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, give them credit. They're this plucky story, this team that was able to battle their way through injury. Shut the hell up. Drive me nuts.
The damn Dodgers.
All right. So, Gerrit Cole screwed it up, and I don't have anything against Gerrit Cole, but when you leave to go get paid all that money and then you blow it, I'm not going to pretend like I don't take a little bit of satisfaction from it. Texter, Rizzo, not Freeman. You're right. Thank you. I am dumb. Just an award-winning Marconi kind of segment for me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to the Steelers before we dive headfirst into Pitt's matchup against SMU coming up in about 10 minutes. Anything that worries you about this Steelers offense?
Like I said, the pass pro, the right side of the offensive line. You know, at some point, the working in the middle of the field, I think it's a convenient narrative because obviously the analytics and stats are there. I'm not sure how noticed it is by the opposition. I don't think they're going to do anything different. You're going to bracket Pickens. I mean, you're going to bracket Pickens anyway, regardless of whether or not they're going to throw it down the field. I think. Listen, if you would have told me they're going into the open week, into the bye week, 6-2, and playing like this on offense, I would have taken it. I would have absolutely taken it. Are they invincible? Are they without any warts? No. I mean, they've got some things they have to mask, and I'm hopeful that Arthur Smith and his experience, he'll be able to diagnose those things during the bye week and try to find a way to mask them as much as possible. But I think what they wanted when they went out and got Russell Wilson is what they're getting from Russell Wilson right now. And that's veteran quarterback playing with a little bit of a youthful edge to him and bringing a leadership to that offense that it has not had in a long time. And I even say that about Kenny and Mason. I mean, it's different now when you're in the huddle with a guy that won a Super Bowl, he's won a world championship. So, and I think he's genuinely grateful to be here, which probably wasn't. Denver was a little bit different circumstance for him. So, no, I'm optimistic. Now, can they go toe to toe with Kansas City? And listen, Kansas City didn't look they're not lighting the world on fire offensively right now. They're running the ball and playing really good defense.
Really good D.
So you kind of like where they sit, to be honest with you.
Are they the most balanced team in the NFL?
One of.
Mm-hmm.
One of. I mean, I definitely put Kansas City up there as being one of the more balanced teams. I think they are. And I think when Jalen Warren's 100%, he gives them a change of pace. And I think Cordarrelle Patterson gives them a little bit. They're not the best offensive line in football. I think they've got some serious holes up there, but they've been able to still run the ball effectively. And that pays going into November and December to be able to be balanced like that.
I am worried, to circle all the way back, about the drop-back passing game, because I do think at that point you will at times need to use the middle of the field. Everything's gone according to plan, basically, for them. You know, the Jets game, they were behind, but the Beanie Bishop interception got them right back into the game. So if you want to run the ball, play action, boot, stuff like that, it's still there. If you're down, you know, two scores in the third quarter, that might change things. And I just wonder what that looks like. One thing we haven't seen, at least in my untrained eye, is the bad sacks from Russell Wilson. Like, some of these sacks we've seen, okay, either your guy gets blown up immediately or there's guys covered down the field. I haven't yelled at the TV going, Russ, what are you doing? I don't think once yet. He'd been sacked five times through two games. I don't put any of them on him.
No, he's done a good job in that regard, and I was concerned because he's been one of the more sacked quarterbacks in the NFL. But this is a different story here.
Mm-hmm.
They're asking him to play differently than they needed him to play in Denver. And one thing to consider about the middle of the field is when you are a balanced offense and you run the football effectively, Doran knows this as well as me, what's that going to elicit from a defense? You're going to get a lot of single high safety. You're going to get a lot of eighth guy in the box. When you're single high safety, where's that safety typically? The middle of the field. He's not cheating to one side or the other. So you've got one-on-ones where? Outside. Now, they're still throwing the ball in the inner cylinder, like the crossing routes to Calvin Austin. That ball could be caught anywhere from the upright to the numbers in the NFL. Like, it's just a matter of where it opens up. So I don't think this is, hey, we're only throwing one-on-one and outbreaking routes. Like, that, I don't see that as much as maybe we've seen that in the past. And I also think some of the, where the ball goes is dictated by the schematics of the defense. And I think the schematics of the defense are being dictated in large part to the Pittsburgh's ability to run the football, which is exactly what they want, to get George Pickens the matchups that he seems to feast on.
Do you think that's Russ identifying that, or is it a collective? I mean, it clearly is a collective. It's Arthur Smith and Russ, but you think it's like when Russ is out there, what he sees is what he is maybe changing to and going to?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, whether you're checking run to run or run to pass, it typically has to do either with something up front in the run-to-run case or where the force or support player is. And if you get a support player in the box, I mean, if you get a two-high safety look and you're the Steelers and it's first and 10, run the ball. If you get a single-high safety look and it's first and 10 and you're not backed up, you got one-on-one. Now, NFL defenses, I'm not saying they're going to spin to one-high safety like 10 seconds before the ball's snapped, but you may have some indicators based on front, based on alignment, based on situation, that tell you, okay, they're going to spin here and go to one high because we're in two tight end and this is our tendency. That's where I think they can get into the master's program a little bit is, okay, what's our tendency in two tight end with Darnell and Pat when we're in 2x2? Or we're in, you know, a spread set where we've got double tight, you tight either side. What's our tendency? Okay, we're getting this coverage 75% of the time. Because teams watch other teams play and what's been successful. So that's where you can start to say, oh, we'll break this tendency. We're going to get this coverage. Let's take this shot. Let's run this play. That's where you can have some fun with it. But I do think that by virtue of the balance and the rushing attacks, I think consistency and explosiveness at times, teams are unwilling to sit back in a two-deep safety defense, save for third and long.
I mean, the Steelers had like a dozen plays at 10 or more yards.
Yeah,
in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's explosive as it ever looked.
Mike, it's just night and day different. And 9 20-plus-yard plays in the last 2 weeks, pretty good. All right, let's flip over to Pitt. They know a little bit about explosive offense, at least the way they played the first 5 or so weeks of the season. Breaking news from Pat Narduzzi last night. We'll tell you what that is when we come back. Has there been any line movement on what Dorn and I consider to be a weird gambling line in this game. We'll get to all of it with Pat Bostic and with Bill Hillgrove for the next half hour or so. Getting into Pitt, Bill Hillgrove joining us in the next segment, Pat Bostic with us until 9 o'clock, but we just went down a John Gruden rabbit hole. I did not know he coached at the University of Pittsburgh.
Sure did.
1991, the last stop he had in college before going to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So he used it as a springboard. He now coaches, because he got canceled and tossed out of the league, he coaches in the European League of Football, the Siemens Milano. It's in Milan, Italy. European League of Football.
So he lives
Siemens
in Italy?
Milano. No.
He's probably coaching remote.
He's an advisor, yeah.
He coaches
remote.
He
ain't coaching. He's doing. Coaching he's got too Zoom. Much content out there.
It has him listed as an advisor. Yeah, the content's great.
Oh, he's Boo! The best. I mean,
he's a freak.
I miss him on like Monday Night Football.
Me too.
I mean,
he's good.
Side note, I was Aikman had me a little bit lost on Monday Night.
I thought he was terrible.
That's what he said too.
I think I did agree with him to some degree about the motion? Illegal shift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was a motion.
Right.
Like that's what they I was... got they got lucky on that one.
So I think letter of the law, okay, you can call it.
You have to get set and then motion. I think he broke the huddle, never got set and then moved.
Yeah.
But like
you don't see that
it wasn't
every
because
time.
He didn't stop at the end of the play. Before the ball snapped. It was because something he did when he broke the huddle.
Mm-hmm. He wouldn't shut up about it.
Oh my gosh.
And he was just going on and on and on. A couple of other things, too. He was out to lunch. But let's talk about this Pitt matchup. On the road, SMU. Should be a lot of Pitt fans there, from what I'm seeing on the social media. Pitt, a 7.5-point underdog. Pat Narduzzi says last night that Eli Holstein is cleared to go. So Eli Holstein will be Pitt's starting quarterback in this game. And yet, this morning, still, 7.5-point underdog. What am I missing, guys? Like, what do they know that we don't know, or what's going on here?
I mean, we've talked about this for the past couple of days, and Pat, I asked you offline, like, what is the deal here? I can't figure it out. I have no idea.
No, I don't. I mean, I will say this: SMU plays really good at home. They save for the BYU game. They've won. I think they've won. Double-digit home conference games in a row. It's been a place they've been successful, particularly under Rhett Lashley. They're coming off a game they should have lost against Duke. I mean, they turned the ball over six times in the game and won. Duke missed two field goals and an extra point in the game. And so that's fluky. You think they're going to come back and play better. Pitt's coming off a game where they won by a decided margin as a result of forcing five turnovers. So are the odds makers saying, hey, something's got to normalize here and we're going to favor the home team? I don't know. I don't know those people. I don't know how they think. Both quarterbacks were questionable at best, to put it, you know, the way the coaches have. Sounds like, obviously, Jennings is going to go and Eli Holstein is going to play. So I will say this, man. I mean, just looking at this is the best team Pitt's played to this point. I mean, I said that about Cal. I felt that way then. This team's better. They're better on offense. They're more consistent. They've got 17 transfers in the two deep on offense and 18 transfers in the two deep on defense. And these are the schools, right? It's Miami, Arkansas, Miami, Georgia, Oklahoma. You know, it's not like
blue bloods we're talking.
Right. So they're getting guys on the rebound that either are from the Southeast and went to a different area or from Texas and went to a different school. And they've got a lot of money with which to work at SMU. I mean, they got a decent payroll. So this will be, I think this game. I thought the Carolina game. Carolina probably had more talent than Pitt. They looked the part more than Pitt. That was the one game I felt like that. Okay, there's a disparity here, and Pitt was able to win, obviously pretty handily. This game, I think SMU has more talent. Are they a better team? I don't think so. I think they're very evenly matched. I think Clemson obviously will have superior talent in some areas, and then Louisville will have a lot of talent. But when you look at them on paper, man, like this SMU team, they're a Power 4 team. I mean, they've got really good talent at every position. The only position they really don't have transfers at is quarterback. That's the only one.
I look at, you mentioned what they've done at home. Their only loss against BYU. BYU, obviously, a really good football team. Another team that Vegas doesn't seem to like all that much. Every time I look up, BYU's an underdog, and they just they don't lose. They beat TCU 66-42. That's a rivalry game. 66 points they hung on them. Beat Florida State 42-16. Not that Florida State's good, but they are talented. And then they go on the road and beat Louisville 34-27 when Louisville was in the top 25. I'm not sitting here saying SMU's not good. I don't know that there's a lot of teams in college football that I would take as a 7.5-point favorite over Pitt right now. And I think that there is a certain level of disrespect that Pitt is dealing with right now. And I think that that aids them. Like, I think that is such a Narduzzi wheelhouse thing. Like, oh, okay, we're going on the road. We're undefeated. And you think that they're more than a touchdown favorite over us? I think Narduzzi loves that kind of stuff. And I think he's as good as anybody in the country at stirring the pot a little bit with that. Like, he's going to have these guys itching to go.
Especially the way the defense plays has been playing the last two games, and especially clearly the last game. You had 9 days to prepare, too. Like, that's very significant, especially for college football. And whenever you're playing significant football games and your defense played the way that it did and created so many turnovers, and you got a young quarterback who's trying to figure his way back to what he was doing in the beginning of the year, having that 9 days, and clearly Holstein is ready to go. But that's what I don't understand about the line, too, because, you know, what was it, overtime in the Duke game for SMU?
Night game overtime.
Night game overtime. You got Pitt. Has they're 9 games up. To prepare. Yeah, they're banged up. That's just you know, if you're Narduzzi, you're absolutely right, Crowley. Like, you're using this as fuel, and especially the way your defense has been playing.
I tell you one thing that will be interesting to watch, because I just pulled up the forecast and it's improved for the game.
Yes, thank goodness.
Is the rain? It's scattered thunderstorms now, as opposed to like a deluge. Oh. I will say this: if you're the odds makers and you think it's going to be a torrential downpour, SMU's got the number one rush offense and rush defense in the ACC. So they're the best rushing team, and they have the best rushing defense. You'd seldom say over Pat Narduzzi's tenure that Pitt would be beneficial for it to be clear skies and blue skies, and bad weather would not benefit Pitt. This would be a year where that would be the exception, right? It'd be different. So if the forecast improves, Pitt's got the better passing game. By far, in my opinion. Now, in terms of like drop back throw at the RPOs and stuff, SMU's talented out there. But be interesting to see if it continues to improve. Does that impact the line? Are people saying, okay, the bad weather favors the home team in this one? You know, they're going to run the ball. I think the over-under is 58.5, which is the lowest I've seen for a Pitt game in some time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Are they favoring the possession, run the ball type team?
If I may, deluge. I mean, just excellent word usage. I mean, that's great stuff right there.
Big word.
A man who likes to use a lot of big words. It's why he's been doing his job at the highest level for a long time. Billy Hilly's going to join us coming up next. I think we need to get more into Pitt, too, at 8 o'clock. There's more meat on this bone. There's more discussion to be had here, including Holstein hasn't played his best football the last two games, and still Pitt 2-0 the last two games. So we'll get to all that with Hillgrove. A little bit more than that in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get back to Steelers as well. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Route 19 in Peters Township celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Pit Breakdown with Doran, Pat, and Bill Hillgrove. Brought to you by Gatorade, available at Giant Eagle stores. And Bill Hillgrove joins us now. Good morning to you, Bill.
Tough one, SMU. Wow. I look at their defense. I think all but two defensive backs are transfers, and you know, a lot of them from Miami and big-time programs, so I think the Panthers have their work cut out, but I think both quarterbacks are going to play, so it should be fun.
Yeah, as you said, Billy, you know, Holstein, he's going to play. They've had 9 days to prepare, but you've seen a lot of young quarterbacks, and you know the roller coaster of being a young quarterback, and do you worry about Eli Holstein? You know, hasn't been himself in the last couple games, and you know, had a nice throw last game down the middle. Could that be something of confidence going into this game, or are you worried a little bit about the young freshman quarterback?
I'm not worried. He's shown me in the past he's got bounce back ability, the ability to forget any bad stuff that happens. So, you know, I'm pretty confident he'll play well. Meantime, you know, his counterpart, Jennings, I saw him get hurt in the Duke game, and he went back in, and they say he's going to play, but he hadn't up until yesterday been cleared for a full practice. So I imagine He'll practice today and tomorrow, and he'll be ready to go. He's what, a great athlete. And Breshard Smith, they're running back, 6.4 yards a carry. Certainly one of the better backs in the league. And on defense, they've got a couple of bell ringers, and they got one of their tackles, I think, weighs 348 pounds. So I'm going to be interested to put the eyeball on him on Saturday.
Yeah, it'll be tough to move. Panthers last played SMU in Texas, Billy, in 1983. The Cotton Bowl Classic in 1983. Wasn't a very memorable game. Wasn't a very memorable game, but what do you remember about the matchup? That was really when both programs were at the height of their powers.
Yeah, it well, I think the final was 7-6, so it wasn't a, you know, it wasn't a shootout. I remember Joe McCall fumbling at the goal line, and that hurt the Panthers. And, you know, at that point, they started like gangbusters. And then, you know, at that point in the season, in the bowl game, they were kind of in a funk. So, you know, that's why Danny Marino went where he did, because they kind of blamed him for the whole, you know, soft part of the second, or the second part of the season being soft. So, you know, that's what I remember. I couldn't do the game. We weren't allowed then, so I had to be on the sideline, and I could sense the frustration on that sideline.
Bill, what do you make of Pippi and a 7.5-point dog in this one?
Well, like I say, SMU is very good. They only have one loss, none in conference, and they're considered one of the better teams in the country. So, yeah, I it kind of surprised me a little bit. I thought it would be less than 7.5, but, you know, those people – out in Lost Wages, Nevada, are very, very objective. So we'll see what plays out.
What are you guys doing this weekend? You get a big old steak barbecue?
Yeah.
Well, no. Friday night, Jamie plays Calipari in an exhibition basketball game. So we'll probably go over to Fort Worth and check that out.
Little TCU Arkansas.
Yeah.
How about that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, good match.
Might get a steak with Jamie after the game, huh?
Yeah, he's excited. How about Billy? Pitt Hoops opens up on Monday night.
Yeah.
How about your level of excitement about that team? They seem to have a lot of parts.
I really see their rotation being 8 or 9. I didn't know about the secret scrimmage. But word got out that they took on Ohio State, not Ohio State.
Cincinnati.
And Cincinnati rebounded better. Pitt shot it better. And that tells me Pitt played the better defense. So, yeah, they're going to be a fine defensive team. You can't say enough about Ishmael Leggett. You know, the sixth man of the year last year and now in the starting lineup. And he's putting up great numbers. And for the exhibition game against Point Park, I watched him, and his footwork on defense is almost flawless. So, you know, it's going to be a fun year. Corhan is a great addition at the 5-hole because we really haven't had a true back-to-the-basket center for a while. He fills that role very nicely.
Cincinnati, one of the top 20 teams in the country in the AP poll coming in as well. Bill, have safe travel, have fun calling the game, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it. H2P.
Bill Hillgrove.
Thanks, Billy.
No kicker talk? I mean,
it's what is understood does not need to be said.
Right. It's understood now.
Namaste.
Mm-hmm.
All right, coming up next, massive matchup as we've been talking about for Pitt. Huge one for Penn State and Ohio State, except I kind of don't think it is. Oh, yeah. I'll explain that when we come back into the Steelers as well in the 8 o'clock hour. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet, 24 Silverado, 1500, 1.9% financing up to 36 months with approved credit through GM Financial. Full terms and conditions at sunchevy.com. Today, oh my gosh, high 78.